Ja, damit begrüße ich Genossin Camarada Lidice. Muchas gracias por venir.
Okay. Ja. Sorry. Thank you, dear comrades. In the name of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Mexico, I thank you for the opportunity to express some conceptions that underlie our struggle. We appreciate your invitation to participate in this Communist Congress organized by the CAO, because these ideological forums are important to address crucial issues of the contemporary class struggle. And also because Germany is one of the countries that occupies today a higher position within the imperialist system, both at the global level as well as within the concrete scope of the European Union. Germany is a nation framework where the class struggle has been intense, both because of the depth and intensity with which Marxism took root among the workers in the 19th century until it became a bastion of the Second International, and because it represented a vehicle for the variants of opportunism and reformism, led first by Bernstein and later by Kautsky. The important period of the German Revolution and Counter-Revolution from 1919 to 1923 is a source of lessons that is studied by our party. We hold in high esteem the contributions of Luxembourg, Liebknecht, Jogiches, Dunker, Zetkin, Thalmann, who were always loyal to the interests of the working class and internationalism, regardless of elements for debate in some positions. We took the bitter lesson of the high cost that is paid when the subjective factor of the revolution, that is the Communist Party, is not sufficiently prepared, cohesive, disciplined, and also tested in the offensive, the defensive, and the retreat. Since then, it was already clear that social democracy was not only degenerating, but that it had become organically integrated as one of the instruments of capitalist political domination, of the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie. This important learning in class confrontation was disregarded in the shift of a strategy that came with the Popular Front line, an inflection of dire consequences for the international communist movement from the 30s to the present day. The struggle against fascism that does not go hand in hand with the overthrow of the capitalism that engenders it ends up becoming a vicious circle, to return to the previous point, which is bourgeois democracy, which is assumed as a lesser evil in the face of fascism. As we know, there are those who consider that erroneous strategy of interclass collaboration as the highest pinnacle of the strategy of the communists, thus contributing to the conformation and instability of government administrations of capital, re-editing ministerialism, so criticized and so justly by Lenin, both in Europe, as is currently happening in Spain, with a capitalist administration concealed as leftist, and in the case of progressivism in Latin America as well. We are also excited about this Communist Congress taking place in the occasion of the annual homage to Rosa and Karl. As you know, all the parties of the Third International held a tradition in January, which was the Triple L Day, to begin the year with impulse, recruiting, agitating, fighting, as a tribute to Luxembourg, Liebknecht, and Lenin. In a few days, it will be a century since Lenin's heart stopped beating, but his ideas continue vibrating, alive and being enforced to this day. and they are the great source from which we draw for our contemporary action. That is why we want to point out one of the theoretical questions with which Lenin enriched Marxism, question that we see as the cause of several problems that the international communist movement faces today when it is misunderstood or approached dogmatically or misrepresented. That's the theory of imperialism. I mean, the imperialist phase of capitalism. The modes of production in history studied by Marx and Engels are expressed in their general characteristics, but they are never static. On the contrary, express the dialectic where they are revolutionary in relation to the previous ones and reach the point of becoming counter-revolutionary as they become an obstacle to the development of the productive forces. The capitalist mode of production, brilliantly studied by Marx, is appreciated at a point of its development in which the process of concentration and centralization of production does not generate the monopoly yet, which, as we know, appears clearly in the early years of the 20th century, as is studied and discussed by the Marxists of the time, finding its clearest conclusions in the profound analysis of Lenin, to the point of being a crucial advancement of the revolutionary and scientific theory of the proletarian. In Imperialism, the Superior Stage of Capitalism, and in a set of works that are grouped in several volumes of his collected works, with much use, especially his study notes known as the Notebooks of Imperialism, Lenin bequeaths us a fundamental theoretical contribution. Among several characteristics of imperialism, Lenin emphasizes throughout, that is, above all, the capitalism of monopolies. Quote, "The appearance of monopolies due to the concentration of production is a general and fundamental law of the present phase of development of capitalism," closing quote. At one point, Lenin says, quote, "If it were necessary to give a definition of imperialism as brief as possible, it should be said that imperialism is the monopolistic phase of capitalism," close quote. We take the time to underline this since some important changes have been produced by the influence of the Great October Socialist Revolution and also by the counter-revolution that temporarily overthrew the socialist construction in the USSR and other countries, as well as by capitalist development itself. Let us give some rather strong examples. The process of decolonization, number one, that accelerated after World War II, in which, for different circumstances, former colonies are today countries of great capitalist development. Undoubtedly, China and India are examples. Number two, constant movements within the imperialist system throughout the 20th century and so far in the 21st, where countries that were dependent a century ago have now reached a high degree of capitalist development in which their bourgeoisies have formed powerful monopolies that are today exporters of capital. For example, Brazil and Mexico in Latin America. This is how in Mexico we boast the dubious honor of having one of the richest billionaires in the world, while millions of Mexican workers live in misery. Now, it is necessary to emphasize that imperialism as the superior phase of capitalism does not correspond only to a handful of countries, but to the capitalist system as a whole. the imperialist pyramid, as we call it and was mentioned before, where there are some countries who are at the top, others in an intermediate position, and others in a lower position, but all in constant competition. We highlight these elements of the Leninist theory of imperialism because they are dogmatic and opportunist approaches in a considerable part of the international communist movement. One is, for example, to consider that imperialism is a group of metropolis and the rest are all dependent countries, or to consider dependence as something absolute and unchangeable, or to think that in the countries where socialism was overthrown, restored capitalism has somehow a progressive or anti-imperialist role. You know who I'm talking about. Or to consider anti-imperialism as a struggle against US imperialism solely and others. But they are all leading to raise a foreign flag to the interests of the working class. A year ago, at the 7th Congress of our party, we concluded a discussion of several years about the character of the social relations of production prevailing in the economy of China. And it is very clear for us that capitalist relations prevail, independently of the phraseology and the opportunist theory of market socialism. There is capitalist accumulation, exploitation of wage labor, formation of powerful monopolies, and an aggressive export of capital throughout the world, but above all in Africa and Latin America. This is also the case where the incompatibility of mercantile and socialist relations is demonstrated, and mercantile relations as a base element of the counter-revolution. But more than dwelling on this last discussion, the point here is understanding that the rivalries that exist between the Chinese economy and its allies against the US economy and its allies is not the confrontation between two opposite economic and political systems, but rather a rivalry between two capitalist states on the side of the US to preserve its dominant role in the imperialist pyramid, and on the side of capitalist China to displace it. In Russia, state domination is in the hands of the same group that led the counter-revolution under ideological and scenographic attempts to present itself as the continuity of the military and scientific glories of the socialist construction, cannot hide monopolies such as Gazprom, Rosneft, Nornickel, Sberbank, among others, which are also greatly open promoters of militarism. This brief balance allows us to appreciate the wide divergence between Marxism, Leninism, and the positions of opportunism on burning contemporary issues. One, the class character of the dispute in the imperialist system, such as the clash between capitalist states, which they disguise as the dispute between a unipolar and a multipolar world. Two, the character of the war that broke out between Russia and Ukraine, soon to be 2 years old, as an imperialist war on both sides, which threatens to become generalized. It's very different from what we social chauvinist positions claim, that it is an anti-fascist war. Three, the general class struggle against capitalism, regardless of the management with which it presents itself. The general struggle against imperialism, leaving aside the confusion of the European Union, NATO, as the only imperialist side. These coordinates sustain a principled position in this hour of sharp turn in the class struggle, and of storms brewing up on the horizon, of consolidating the class and internationalist position, and as stated in the Joint Declaration of Communist and Workers' Parties of February 2022. The interest of the working class and the popular strata require that we communists strengthen the class criteria to analyze the event, to chart the course of our own independent path against the monopolies and the bourgeois classes, for the overthrow of capitalism, for the strengthening of the class struggle against the imperialist war, and for socialism, which remains as valid and necessary as ever. Lenin also explained that imperialism drives the phenomenon of opportunism that has a greater activity, as we know, since the outbreak of the imperialist war. And it has influenced the political and ideological bankruptcy of several parties, which seem to have before a correct direction, but now, in addition to show an accelerated ideological degeneration, have decided to act as shock troops against their revolutionary positions. Some of them are today in partnership with groups of murky origin, others with chauvinist positions, as is the case of the anti-imperialist World Platform, which is a letterhead with ample financing that precisely insists on presenting a caricature of the theory of imperialism, where the class struggle is subordinated and sacrificed in favor of the monopolies that promote multipolarity. All those who are there sink into the pond of opportunism after abandoning the red flag by whitewashing and supporting one of the parts of capitalism and one of the sides of the imperialist war with the massacre of the workers and peoples involved. Comrades, another issue we at the Communist Party of Mexico carry out, self-critique, demarcation, and class, is the theory of the intermediate stages that appear early with the Popular Front governments, and that it has an abrupt manifestation with brotherism, which is not only the theory of the liquidation of the party, but of the stable and peaceful long-term alliance between some capitalist countries and socialism. This theory consolidates as a strategy with the opportunist platform of the 20th and 22nd Congresses of the CPSU, with the peaceful road to socialism and the national ways and the breeding ground for Eurocommunism. The idea of an intermediate stage between capitalism and socialism is the negation of the Leninist theory of imperialism as a prelude to the proletarian revolution, the socialist revolution. Under a static approach to the theory of imperialism for more than half a century, the program of the communists in Mexico considered that ours was a dependent and oppressed country. Hence, the main task of the working class was to form an alliance with part of the bourgeoisie in a patriotic or national liberation front to conquer the independence and sovereignty of the nation and expand democracy, which then would open the conditions for a Mexican road to socialism, quote unquote. But the years accumulated, and with them several decades, and while the working class remained politically subordinated to the bourgeois parties of the national developmentalist current, the incessant development of capital with its process of concentration and centralization pushed the bourgeois of Mexico and its monopolies to an intermediate position within the imperialist system, a process that also has continued to improve constantly in recent months, even displacing Spain, South Korea, and Australia. The drafting of the new program of the Communist Party, a process that lasted more than a decade, The study of capitalism in Mexico based on Marxist-Leninist theory led us to question that strategy of intermediate stages and to recover the conclusions that Lenin had already put forward of placing the socialist revolution and socialism communism as the concrete and tangible objectives facing the historical limits of capitalism, regardless of whether the correlation of forces might be adverse at a given moment, because forces and efforts must be concentrated in one direction. This has also led us to the clash with the opportunist forces in Mexico, which remain tied to the strategy of intermediate stages that support bourgeois governments like that of current President López Obrador and a non-neoliberal capitalist managed, so it's called, but also with a clash with the opportunistic forces within the communist movement in Latin America, which note socialism as an objective, but in the far horizon. And they do not fight for it, but for the impossible humanization of capitalism. For this reason, also the 7th Congress of the Communist Party of Mexico presented conclusions on the so-called progressive governments of the, quote, socialism of the 21st century, end quote, which, after a quarter of a century, have continued framed in the capitalist mode of production without carrying out any rupture, but simple reforms, simple cosmetic measures such as welfareism. After a quarter of a century, in the countries of progressive governments, the bourgeois continue to increase their profits. The workers continue to be brutally exploited. Property continues to belong to a few, whether private or state. Wealth continues to be produced socially, but its appropriation remains private. No means of production were socialized. Did progressivism allow the working class to organize, to strengthen the communist parties? Our most general answer is no. But it is not enough to clash with those political forces in progressivism that are social democratic and also anti-communist, as shown in Venezuela with the aggression of the government of Nicolás Maduro to the Communist Party of Venezuela, a broader party to which we ratify here our solidarity. It is very important to further the struggle for a revolutionary strategy for the communist movement in Latin America, the fight against opportunism, the solidarity with those who are in favor of the revolutionary regroupment of the communist movement, and the rebirth of communist parties that are so by content and form, and not the shameful cases of parties that, having the communist denomination, even historically, in fact, they have become politically, ideologically, and organizatively social democratic formations. Comrades, maybe there is a question that you will have in relation to the class struggle in Mexico and about the government that is announced as leftist of López Obrador, that although it's running its last 8 months, probably will have continuity in the foreseeable triumph of his party, it's called Morena, in the federal elections of June of this year. Is Obrador's government leftist and progressive? And if it were so, should it have the support of the communists? In both cases, our answer is no. Obrador managed to group the will for change against 35 years of privatizations and structural adjustments in Mexico. Take into account that the bourgeois democratic revolution of 1910, when it triumphed, forged an economy with a powerful state sector in industry, distribution, and services. But as of 1982, 1,100 public enterprises, that's 70% of the public sector, were handed over from the hands of the state as collective capitalists to private hands. For example, Telmex, or the airlines, the steel industry, the banks, also an important part of Pemex, the oil industry, and the communally held agricultural land called ejido in Mexico, thus worsening social inequality and extreme poverty faced by more than 60 million people. The purchasing power of wages was lost by 70%. And all of these anti-popular measures generated social protests, which were violently repressed. This is what some baptized as neoliberalism, as if it were something different from capitalism. And it occurred in the world context of the retreat of the opportunistic leadership of the Soviet Union, that allowed the advance of the counter-revolution against socialist construction and the conquest it promoted in the workers' movement at the international level, as well as the periods of crisis that occurred between the 70s and the 80s. It was against this that Obrador was able to concentrate the electoral strength of the popular movements to overcome the traditional parties. But then, when he came to power, did he reverse any of the privatizations while in government? The answer is clearly no. For example, an emblematic privatization was Telmex, biggest telecom company in Mexico, which is part of the monopoly called Carso, whose owner is Carlos Slim, one of the plutocrats who appears in the list of the richest people in the world. I think now he's back to the first place. Not only López Obrador did not expropriate Telmex or even return it to the state sector of the economy, but now he works very close to Slim, whom he repeatedly calls an exemplary socially conscious businessman. Now he's a benefactor. In the meanwhile, Slim benefited with multiple and millionaire public works contracts, subway, trains, roads, and so on and so forth. López Obrador's government did not repeal any of the most aggressive counter-reforms of the so-called neoliberal era that were more harmful to the interests of the working class, such as, for example, labor reform or privatization of pensions. One of the most damaging agreements for Mexico's sovereignty was the signing of NAFTA. But in fact, with Trump and later with Biden, López Obrador carried out successful renegotiation to continue, simply changing the name to TEMEC or USMCA, as it was demanded by the North American monopolies to reconfigure the safeguarding of their profits in the scenario of the inter-imperialist dispute. Previous governments that wanted to impose the militarization of the country encountered a broad popular opposition. But then, deep militarization was precisely one of Obrador's first governmental measures. Now the military is everywhere in Mexico. They own airports, roads, all kinds of enterprises. I will also mention here the use of the recently created National Guard as a sort of border patrol of Mexico that is implementing without any qualms the fierce anti-immigrant policy imposed by both Trump and Biden. For the monopoly tycoons, the doors of the National Palace of Government are always open. The plutocracy in Mexico now increases its profits even during the harsh period of the pandemic. Now they are protected, stimulated, while the working class and the people suffer the most abject misery. This is not a leftist or progressive government. It is, with a different discourse, as harmful to the interest of the working class and the popular sectors as the governments of previous years. Suppose now the case that the opportunist mirage would be true. So suppose that privatizations were reversed or the state sector of the economy was recovered, and then we broke up with NAFTA and rejoined the BRICS, or disengaged from the unipolarity and joined the multipolarity. Would that mean putting an end to the exploitation and suffering of the people? Does that eliminate the task of overthrowing capitalism and bringing the working class to power? Does that eliminate the objective of socialism, communism? Our conclusion is that, regardless of its management, whether neoliberal or Keynesian, liberal or social democrat, we as communists invariably have to be the antagonist of capitalism to carry forward the social classist opposition. Comrades, we hold the conviction that the difficulties, the complexity of the period we live in, the crisis and the imperialist war are obstacles that we must face with determination, since objectively we are in the antechamber, the prelude of a new wave of revolutions that will give continuity to the era that the great October Socialist Revolution inaugurated, the transition from capitalism to socialism. In this direction, the role of the Communist Party is non-negotiable, since it is an indispensable factor of the revolution. The Communist Party is not only part of the revolutionary process, it is the one who prepares it, unleashes, and leads it. It is not the creator of the subjective factor. It is in itself the subjective factor of the historical mission that the workers of the world have to fulfill as grave diggers of capitalism. The reconstruction of revolutionary communist parties, of a common revolutionary strategy for the international communist movement, is a duty that no communist, no Marxist-Leninist should shy away from. And today, more than ever, there is no time to lose. As Engels and Rosa said, the choice is socialism or barbarism. Long live Lenin, Luxemburgo, and Liebknecht. Long live the revolutionary communists from Germany and all the world over. Thank you, comrades.